Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 312. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing these episodes to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the product and the people. And Train Heroic's got a fantastic product, but even better people behind it. So if you're in the market, please reach out. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Joel Proskowitz. Joel is founder of Performance RX over in London. And, just recently, he attended a conference that one of my assistants, Rudy Thomas, was at. And just Rudy came away and said right away, Joel's a guy that you have to get involved in the podcast, get speaking, do whatever. But he was blown away by the friendship that you guys formed and just said that was something that I needed to do the same, man. So I'm excited you're on the show, so I get a chance to get to know you better, but also learn from you in the process.
Great. Well, Coach Ron, thanks very much for firstly inviting me on the show, and secondly, the kind words, because when I was at the conference and I met Rudy straight away, I just knew, man, that I'm dealing with a top-class individual, a good guy, and it was very, very kind of him to speak so kindly of me. And hence, here we are today, man.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, Joel, you got an interesting story. And rather than kind of go really deep into it, I mean, you've been in South Africa. I think you worked rowing in South Africa as well. You've been, working with Stuart McGill for, I think, 13 or 14 years at this point.
I have, yeah.
You were a bodybuilder. You were a black belt in karate. I mean, you've got a lot of interesting things about you. What aspect of your kind of personal life or professional life best defines you in your current role?
Wow. Big question that, Ron. So for me, the key is that I'm always constantly pushing myself to try and get better. And what I mean by that is that, I've had all these wonderful experiences. I've worked with some amazing people. But there's never a day that goes by, Ron, when I don't look at myself and I think that I'm really still at the very, very bottom rung of the ladder. And it then allows me to just open my heart and open my head to meet really good people and just learn from all their experiences. So really where I am right now is I'm trying to better myself in the world of spinal biomechanics. I'm trying to understand how I can use that in the world of strength and conditioning, and just create the ability to look after and better the people who seek out my services and who seek out my my experience really in life. That's where I am at the moment, man.
Yeah, I think so much to unpack there. I mean, I think obviously I'm sure there's a story behind why the spine or why back in general was an area of interest to you. But before we dig into that, I always like to define some of the trials and tribulations that we've gone through, or the problems that we faced, and things that I think being vulnerable and sharing those things helps coaches help to avoid some of those mistakes that guys that have been in it for a while like we have. So what's one of the biggest mistakes you've made in the area of human performance, and how you've learned from it?
Oh. Again, another great question. Probably one of the biggest mistakes was that, plain and simple, man, I thought I knew it all. So in the early days of my career, I, as a South African, I was very, very lucky because I managed to travel to the United States to go to all the S&C conferences pretty much every year for about a period of 10 years. And in South Africa, there was very little competition in the world of personal training and strength and conditioning when I originally got into it. So straight away, after one or two trips to the US, I truly thought that I knew it all. Sure. And then I got to meet some people that had a lot of experience under their belt, Ron. And it's a very humbling experience when you get involved with elite athletes, as you know, and your decisions derail them. And on that basis, it became an extremely very apparent, this is time to eat humble pie and realize that there's many different ways to skin a cat. And you got to go out there and you just got to learn what to do, what not to do. Yes. And just apply as best as you can, man.
It's such a, it's such an important thing. That's just it. I mean, you know, you can have the ideal way of training somebody in your head, or at least what you believe. But then all of a sudden, I mean, I know you worked rowing there in South Africa. I mean, Rudy yep. and I, we showed up to train the Chinese rowing team in outside of Beijing. And, you know, the night before, they had taken all the weights out of the weight room and had a blank weight room sitting there for us, you know, for day one of off-season training.
Well, there you go, so, man.
You know, whenever you're throwing those curveballs, which you are in sport, that's when it's, you know, that's when you really have to draw upon that toolbox and those experiences and all that extra learning that you do to prepare yourself for different types of trials and tribulations that come your way. So I couldn't agree more with you. You know, we mentioned that you were a black belt in karate, that you talked a little bit about always kind of being learned. I think that's kind of the mindset of a martial artist, right? Is to always be a white belt. I mean, I've done martial arts throughout my life, and I was a wrestler. Now I've gotten into jiu-jitsu in the last year and had to go back to being a white belt and learn something new every single day. Talk a little bit about how your experience with martial arts has made you a better coach.
So it's funny you asked me that question, because that's how I open all my presentations. I've got a picture of myself, you know, doing karate back a few years ago. And I'll say this, Ron, categorically, that martial arts has been the single most influential art or sport that I've done that's allowed me to take something that's been really complex, strip it down into its most basic parts, and then be able to teach those parts to then eventually put the whole scenario back together again. So what martial arts has done for my ability as a strength and conditioning coach, as I say, it's allowed me to simplify the complex. And also what martial arts does is it humbles you, because the minute you learn something, you are then pressed in the traditional martial art to then teach it.
Right.
So, because being a great martial artist doesn't mean you're a great teacher, but it really was an amazing education in giving me the ability to teach. And hence, that's really what I'm doing now. I'm spending a lot of my life running around the world and teaching, and I'm extremely thankful and grateful really to my parents for pushing me into martial arts when they did.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's such a powerful thing to walk on the mat and to feel like, I mean, a guy like myself, I'm a big, strong guy. You know, I walk on the mat and I get tapped out by a 150-pound woman, you know, and it's, you know, and it's like,
humble pie.
How does this happen, you know?
Exactly.
But at the same time, I think, you know, like you said, I think, the learning and the tact, you know, the learning through auditory, visual, and kinesthetic, then turn around and having to, you know, tactically apply it. And then also, you know, you find yourself teaching it as you go through, and it's a great environment for that. And I think sometimes in strength and conditioning, we're a culture that's full of egos. We're a culture that's full of kind of, you know, keeping everybody at an arm's length, you know, and I think the martial arts community forces you to kind of embrace being like, hey, we're in this together. It's a journey together, as opposed to I'm trying to one up you, you know.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
You know, a few years back, you know, my wife and I were funny. We're about to go back to Hawaii here in a couple of weeks with our family, but we had taken a trip, her and I, and you know, I'd stepped wrong on the sand, and my back just wrenched, and it was like the most crippling pain that I'd ever experienced. You know, you spent, you know, several years working with Dr. McGill. You've done quite a bit of work on your own. What drew you to the low back and spinal biomechanics as an area of expertise in this big, huge profession and performance realm?
Plain and simple, there were two events in my life, Ron, that made me dig deeper into understand the spine. Number one, it was during a karate class. I had done a particular move, and it was the very first time in my life that I basically got floored. I was on my knees, man, and I had this phenomenal back pain. And this was really at the early days of my S&C career, so I didn't quite know what was going on. And then what I did is I took a year off or 2 years off martial arts to involve myself in bodybuilding. And at the end of the 2 years, I was pretty beat up in my back. And I went to go see a neurosurgeon in South Africa. To cut a long story short, the guy basically said to me, Joel, I want you to give up all your sport. I want you to give up your occupation, because if you don't, you're basically going to land up in a wheelchair. Then what had happened was that year was the only year that I never went to the S&C conference in the US. And my business partner came back and he said to me, this was about 2004. And he said, Joel, he goes, I've heard the best keynote speaker I've ever heard. He said, I bought you his book, Go and Fix Your Back. And he threw the first edition of Low Back Disorders onto my desk. And that was the very first entry, Ron, into me exploring Stu McGill's methods, his concepts, his ideas, his research. And I was very lucky because 2 years later, and a long story, we'll call it South African persistence, I got to meet Stu actually here in London. And Stu said, listen, Joel, he goes, I've got 5 minutes for you. He goes, how can I help you? And I said, you know, Stu, I said, my back is giving me big trouble, and I'm afraid it seems as if I'm going to have to leave the S&C career. And 5 minutes turned into 3 hours. 3 hours has turned into 14 years. I'm pretty much very resilient in my back. I've got no pain. I still squat. I still deadlift. I do a whole host of things. And now I travel the world with Doc McGill teaching his stuff. And that's really the story, Ron.
That's awesome. You know, there's always the strength and conditioning, why I became a strength and conditioning coach, or why you kind of niched down into a specific area of expertise. I think it always comes back to some sort of event in your life that puts you down that road. And
Absolutely. Everybody
has their own motivations for different things. And I think when you sit back and you really kind of, you start to see these experts, I think that's the question that you got to get to as to why they're passionate about what they are, but you're obviously passionate about it. I mean, you know, you look at sports like powerlifting where, I mean, you know, to the traditional eye, to the untrained eye, I mean, the biomechanics of that just look awful for the back, right? Or you look at, yes. Or you look at, you know, you walk into any kind of primary school or college and you see lifting and you have to cringe about biomechanics, but everybody's biomechanics are a little bit different. Can proper biomechanics really reduce injury? And what is proper biomechanics at that point?
Again, another good question. Everyone is different, Ron. And that's why at no stage would we ever offer a template. And unfortunately now with the advent of social media, there's so many people that have got opinions with not applying context to what they're showing there.
Right.
So with regards, you'll get a lot of people saying that, take a look at that particular power lifter on social media. He's lifting with a flexed spine and he holds the world record, and therefore that lifting with a flexed spine is not going to do any damage. Well, firstly, you need to look at that and you need to understand the mechanics. Is that power lifter lifting with a flexed lumbar spine, or have they locked their lumbar spine into neutral, flex their thoracic spine, and then utilizing their hips, which in and of itself is a phenomenally advanced technique or technical proficiency to be able to do.
Right.
So the thing is that there's many people, Ron, that can get away with flexing their lumbar spine under load and going many, many years without actually having any type of issue or any type of problem. And then what is seemingly the most mundane movement, bending over and maybe tying their shoes, bam, their back goes.
Right.
So the whole thing is this, is that we really want to keep people within the envelope of safety. And, you know, if you look at Dr. McGill's work, he's turned around and he said, right, to keep people in the envelope of safety, if you're going to be under any type of load, it's going to be the wisest choice to maintain an element of a neutral spine whereby you can maintain high levels of muscle contraction to buttress against certain forces and shear forces in the spine. However, we all know something, that the cost of doing business, if you're a powerlifter or a heavy athlete, is the world of chaos and not being able to maintain certain things throughout the whole, throughout your lifting career. So the point I'm trying to make is that it changes for everyone, Ron. And there's no blanket statement that can definitively say that, you know, lifting this way is better than lifting that way, because we need to see the person. We need to understand their lifestyle. We need to understand their history. How advanced are they? Do they have the neurology to do certain things under load that maybe your young 17-year-old lifter just doesn't have? So there's so many things to take into consideration. But the people who I deal with, I generally want to make sure that I keep them within a really high margin of safety, Ron. And if I can make sure that they use up their bank account when they need to get onto the platform or onto the football field, then that's cool. But when they're under my care and in my facility and in my gym, I'm going to do as best as I can to maintain what is their ideal biomechanics.
Yeah, I think that's such a great answer. And I think that's so uncommon where people are trying to fit them into some sort of template or some sort of predisposed tracking system or something along those lines. And I think I agree with you 100%. I mean, every single body is different. That's what, I mean, that's, everybody's fearfully and wonderfully made, right? I think.
Absolutely, man.
I think it's important. There is a cost benefit to performance, right? And, you know, when you're dealing with the traditional powerlifter or the traditional weightlifter, where, there is going to be that vertical force, and there's going to be spinal loading and those types of things. It's just a part of the sport. I think it's a little bit different than, say, elite professional sport, rugby, American football, some of these gladiator type sports where, there's been such a emphasis placed on high KPIs and some of the traditional lifts. Is there such a thing when it comes to spinal biomechanics? I mean, is there such a thing as this is strong enough, or this is enough load for an athlete, or is it all dependent upon what that athlete's able to brace and co-contract and support?
Well, how we would look at it, Ron, is before we take a look at what the spine can tolerate, what we need to do is we need to understand the athlete's sport, and we need to understand their neurology. So if I could use a martial artist, I get to see a lot of injured martial artists, particularly Brazilian jiu-jitsu players, on the basis that they have, for some bizarre reason, been told that they need to chase this athleticism of getting really strong in the gym, which will be pertinent to enhancing their ability to be good on the BJJ mat.
Right.
And I very, very rarely get to see that, Ron, on the basis that the neurology required to lift a deadlift or a squat, a one or a two repetition max, really heavy, requires a different thought process to what that particular athlete would require on the mat. They require that relaxation. And as you know, you're doing BJJ now, you require the relaxation and the strategic thought process. And when the time calls for it, you then need to have the ability to contract really, really fast and then potentially have a very fast rate of relaxation once again.
Right.
So if I'm going to invade the neurology of that particular athlete with something in the gym that could potentially derail them completely, I need to rethink the combination of the strength and conditioning program and how it enhances their sporting ability. So that's how I look at it more before I actually look at the spine itself. And then I start to look at the athlete and then get to understand what their spine can tolerate. And that comes from a very, very comprehensive biomechanical assessment that Dr. McGill has put together. So we test their compression ability. We test to see actually if bracing strategy amplifies their pain or actually lessens their pain. Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of big athletes, a lot of strong athletes, when they brace, they take it to the absolute end, or the nth degree. And that bracing strategy can be something that really amplifies their pain triggers. So really, at the end of the day, Ron, quite simply, you've got to look at the car. You've got to understand the race that it needs to run. And as the mechanic, you then need to fine-tune the car specifically for that race. The best way that I can put it across, man.
Yeah, I think it is. I think everybody's unique, and I think that applies across the board. With what you mentioned there, I mean, obviously, if you're a strength conditioning coach at a professional team or a collegiate team, you almost serve as a kind of a triage nurse to kind of get, between them to get to somebody like yourself or Stuart or a physical therapist or whatever it may be. What are some things to kind of triage to kind of communicate with an athlete on, how to prevent it from getting to the point where they're having to go to a specialist if you're a strength and conditioning coach?
Strength and conditioning coaches with professional teams, I believe, have a very, very difficult job. And I hold you guys in great, great respect. I really do, because you've been pulled in so many different directions, between your athletes, between the skills coaches and the rest of the team. And the best thing that I can say, at least in my mind, is as a strength and conditioning coach dealing with professional athletes, I think one of the major aspects of that job is to have the ability to protect the athlete from themselves.
Right.
And that's a really, really difficult thing to do. But if a strength and conditioning coach can sort of buy into the athlete's hopes and dreams, and the athlete has that sort of good rapport with the strength and conditioning coach, I think really at the end of the day, the strength and conditioning coach has a phenomenal amount of power to at least assist the athlete with protecting themselves and allowing them the longevity of their career so that they can get on the field and do what they need to do. As they always say, Ron, right, you want to be a better runner, go and run, man.
Right.
And I think at the end of the day, I've been an S&C coach for some high-level athletes, and really at the end of the day, I was there just to protect them and make sure that they were never taking themselves over their tipping point in the gym. I never wanted them to leave their best in the gym. They needed to empty their gas tanks either in the rowing boat or on the field, man. And that's really important.
Such a great point. I think a lot of people, their assumption is that these athletes are trying to constantly kick them in the butt and to get them going. And you're kind of just this drill sergeant always kind of driving them. The reality is that when you're dealing with elite athletes, that's more often the case, is where you're trying to manage them, to pull them back, because they're such elite performers. They're such go-getters.
Absolutely, man.
It's such a delicate balance, because you don't want to be the guy or gal that says, that's like, slowing them down, because in their mind that more is better. But you're having to take the complex and explain it to them in a simple way. For them to understand that more is not always better. So I agree with that 100%.
Good man.
What do you think, just kind of to wrap this up in a bow, what is the number one piece of advice that you would have for the strength and conditioning coach, of things that maybe you're seeing, that you walk into a gym and you just kind of cringe and you're just kind of like, this is, why are we doing this?
From my experience, slow down. That's my number one piece of advice. Slow down, take a step back and just survey the land, survey the athletes, get to understand who and what you're dealing with. If I can use the term, it's like a bull in a china shop. Yeah. I think a lot of guys in our industry, as you say, they want to go out there and they just want to push their athletes. They want to be the guy that is known for taking the athletes, you know, to the championship game and everything else. I think in today's world, slowing down and just because there's so much information, but that information doesn't translate to knowledge, Ron. And if you sometimes allow an athlete just to slow down, and that could even be with a thought process, it could be with them performing an exercise, it gives them time to digest a whole host of things for them to then be able to go really fast, really hard, etc. So, you know, sometimes I always say, if you ever come to Performance RX, sometimes you'll walk in here and you'll see, you know, myself and maybe two or three of my coaches on the floor, and we're with clients and everything's just really slow, really precise. The clients are digesting everything. And at the end of the day, they walk out of here not losing their session, but actually walking out winning. And for me, I just want every session to be won. And that doesn't mean me pushing them to the absolute end of the range, man.
Great. Well, we end the show with some resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
The best piece of coaching advice I ever received. I've got to think about this one, Ron, if that's okay. Probably when my business partner in South Africa, who was actually the very first official strength and conditioning coach in South Africa. He said to me once, Joel, I hear a doggy there, man.
I got two big Dobermans running around.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Go ahead. But Mark said to me once, he said, the most frustrating thing in the world is that they don't understand that they don't understand. And that for me has stayed with me forever, Ron, because I always think to myself, if I'm working with someone, if I see something that's wrong, if I see a coach saying certain things, I say to myself, is the problem that they don't understand that they don't understand?
Yeah.
Sometimes we need to, as I say, take a step back and just re-engineer a thought process a little bit and then decide from there if what we're doing is correct or maybe we need to go another direction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like that cartoon where you're looking at, you know, one guy's on one side of a six and the other guy's on the other side of a nine, and they keep saying that they're seeing a six or a nine, right? And they're
both exactly. Exactly, man.
What about a book, app, website recommendation?
Well, a book, probably one of the most I've read many influential books, but the one that stands out for me that comes back over and over again is something called The Man's Search for Meaning by Dr. Viktor Frankl. I'm sure most coaches have heard about it, but if you haven't, that is a book that really truly changed my thought process in my life. And so Viktor Frankl was a survivor of the Holocaust, and he went on to form a type of psychotherapy called logotherapy, where essentially he wanted to empower his patients so that they could look after themselves and not rely on him as the therapist. Right. But if I may, just very, very quickly, there was something he turned around in the book which applies to the athletic career and S&C coaches. He turned around and he said the biggest problem that he found with young men coming to see him that had sort of lost their way in life was that they had something that he termed hyper-intention. So their intention to hit their mark was so great that they were inevitably always missing the mark. And he said when he put everything into perspective for them and pulled them back and slowed them down and reduced that hyper-intention,
right,
they always then were on the road to achieving their goal.
think he was. I think he was also the one that said that that one of the first things that he would do is have them pour into somebody else's life too, right? So by pouring into somebody else's life, it was it gave them bigger meaning than just their own.
Yeah. Absolutely, man.
Any apps or websites?
Before I do, Ron, and I've just got a delivery from Amazon, so I can shout out for this, man. Okay, so that's my next read.
That is nowhere near a man's search for meaning.
Don't worry, my next read.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much. Yeah, app or website?
So an app. The only app I really use. I'm not big on technology, man. The only app I use is Sleep Cycle.
Yep.
So I know it's quite a popular app, and just for me, that's more than enough data that I need in my life. And I just think, again, with guys like Matthew Walker talking about sleep and the importance of sleep, for me, that's my number one thing. Websites, there's a whole host of websites. I'm obviously going to give Dr. McGill's website a plug here, which is backfitpro.com. You know, he's got a lot of information there. He's got, he's put on all his resources. You've got access to his books, and really that's, I try my hardest not to spend too much time with technology. So I'm doing my stuff and putting my head into pen and paper, man.
That's the way to do it. Well, I know, you know, you teach quite a few courses for Dr. McGill, but you also have some of your own courses, and then obviously a thriving business in London. Where can people follow you, reach out to you, find more information?
Sure. So even though I said I'm not big on technology, naturally, like everyone else in the world today, I'm on Instagram, which is Perform, that's P-E-R-F-O, P-E-R-F-O-R-M _RX. And you can find me at performancerx.co.uk. Got all my contact details there. So those are probably the two best places to find me. And also if everyone's lost, you can get me on backfitpro.com. I'm on there as an instructor and part of Backfit Pro.
It's awesome. Well, man, this has been great. And like I said, I mean, you know, what I love about these podcasts is it's such a great opportunity just for people to learn and get some insight and be a fly on the wall, you know, of two coaches talking, but also it gives me an opportunity to start a friendship and start a conversation and a relationship, man. And I can see why Rudy wanted to connect us very easily, and I'm looking forward to coming over and spending some time the next time I'm over in London and hanging out with you a little bit.
Thanks, Ron. And thank you very much for having me on here. It's always, as I always say, there's so many great coaches and people in the industry out there. So when I get picked to come and share my experiences, I'm extremely grateful and extremely humbled. And also, I must echo your sentiment. It's fantastic to start new friendships. And thank you very much. And I hope all your listeners got at least one or two little bits of insight into how I live my life, and it's useful for them. So thank you very much.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.